it's already the interest of some quite broad group, broader than informal patronage networks, ethnic groups, families, and so on. But in the Soviet Union, this representation of the corporate interests were repressed. They were important, but they were moved to the informal sphere. And when the structure of the communist hegemony degraded, rotted, and basically collapsed, what remained? These informal networks. And instead of the interests of at least some socially bounded groups, we've got the informally patronage structured society. When people could, in very contradictory way, combine a huge criticism towards the elite, thieves and mafia, but on the other hand, instead of mobilizing collectively in defense of their interests, they were relying on the same informal patronage channels in order to solve their problems. This is kind of like the bifurcated Philistine consciousness, which was very much predominant in our countries. Yeah. So, if you have hegemony crisis, what are the solutions to this? Did we have any organic solution? In fact, what we did have were the two deficient solutions. One could be described with Gramscian concept of Caesarism, the personalistic authoritarian rule which consolidated in the most of the post-Soviet countries, Russia, Belarus, Azerbaijan, and most of the Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, so on. In Gramsci, Caesarism is a particular solution for the situation which is characterized by the equilibrium of forces heading towards catastrophe. And Caesarism is defensive restorative. It's coercion and also only passive consent of the masses. Nothing like active, enthusiastic, hegemonic support. The masses simply prefer the stability to the risk of the catastrophic changes. And Gramsci has a discussion of the pre-modern and modern Caesarism types, how the Caesarist leaders who relied on military, like Napoleon Bonaparte, that kind of rule transforms into the police, and from the personalistic leadership to the institutions. He even discussed whether it's possible to have a Caesarist party. And fascist could be discussed as a kind of like a Caesarist collective rule. And that the conflict of those forces which head towards catastrophe becomes an irreconcilable class conflict, which just cannot be solved based on some win-win resolution. In the post-Soviet countries, what we've got, the leaders like Putin or Lukashenko, their major legitimating narrative was that they prevented and overcome the post-Soviet collapse. They restored some stability. And this narrative was the main legitimating tool in order to support their rule. Why people vote for Putin? Primarily because they do not see any other alternative. But it was not just some stability. These kind of leaders, they tamed the centrifugal tendencies in the post-Soviet ruling class during the 1990s collapse. They consolidated it to some extent. They balanced some fractions. They repressed other fractions. So they played some function for consolidating the ruling class, however, not in a hegemonic way. However, there were also some clear specifics. So the situation was the not really the symmetrical strength of the fighting. So social forces that lead to the disaster, but their symmetrical weakness. The weakness both of the ruling class, but also of the subaltern classes. The main post-Soviet conflict is arguably reconcilable between the quasi-Jacobin professional middle classes allied with some oppositional fractions of the ruling class against the Caesarist leaders. And in case of the post-Soviet revolutions, what we've seen is the swapping of the fraction of the ruling class in power, not any existential challenge to the ruling class. And also, the unlike in Gramsci, from pre-modern to modern Caesarism, we actually did have a reverse situation or process, primitivization and personalization of politics. The politics based primarily on the informal patronage networks that were only in kind of like in a facade way represented in the quasi-liberal institutions in the political parties. So the outcome was not the solution for the hegemony crisis, but its conservation, preservation. The solution, the Caesarist solution, was fundamentally unstable. And one of the sources of the instability is that the personalistic authoritarian rule is open to the crisis of succession. When Putin becomes too old, or Lukashenko is elected as a president for fourth, fifth, sixth time, the people are just tired. And there is a question who would succeed Lukashenko and Putin. And this question is actually a very difficult one, because you cannot be wrong about this person. You want to resign in a proper time, and you do not want to be removed by your chosen successor. At the same time, so the successor should not be too smart, but at the same time, it should not be too dumb. And the succession crisis is always creating some centrifugal tendencies in the ruling elite when the conflicts between different factions accelerate, and they're thinking now who would win after the old leader is going away. Another deficient solution is a deficient revolution. And here we are with my colleague and co-author, Russian sociologist Oleg Zhuravlev, we are developing a theory of Maidan revolutions. Maidan, it has actually became a generic concept in Ukraine, but also in the whole post-Soviet space. And I think we can develop it as a generic concept for many countries that would address this fundamental problem of the disappearance of social revolutions nowadays. And this problem is discussed by many authors, and some explain it with the expansion of democracy. It just doesn't make sense to make a revolution against democracy, or with the expansion of the urbanized societies. We believe that we actually can address this question with the concept of hegemony and counter-hegemony, and understanding how these deficient revolutions, they instead of producing the strong hegemony of the new progressive class, they only reproduce and intensify the crisis of hegemony. So the Maidan revolutions, they are characterized by large-scale popular mobilization against the government that combines the revolutionary aspirations, rhetoric, even repertoire of collective actions, violent and nonviolent, with only vaguely articulated claims, with only loose structures of mobilization, with only weak and dispersed leadership. Their counter-hegemony, the revolutionary counter-hegemony, is extremely weak. And that explains why they are so deficient. So they do generate a kind of like revolutionary legitimacy for which political agents may compete and which they can hijack. However, they do not establish a hegemonic relation. And the Maidan revolutions, they respond to the crisis of hegemony. They're fundamentally because of the crisis of political representation that the authoritarian personalistic leaders, they do not represent the societies. However, in the dynamics of these revolutions, they only reproduce the hegemony crisis and even intensify it. And what, for example, happened during the Euromaidan revolution in Ukraine in 2014, how it worked with reproduction and intensification of hegemony crisis, you get like millions of very diverse population at the streets, and they start feeling to be united, representing the whole nation. What happens is a kind of like eventful nationalism. Nationalism connected to very specific mobilization event. And it looks like the universalization of the interests, speaking about the presenting the interest as the interest of the whole nation. But in
in Almere, fuck de trend. Ik volg mijn eigen trend.
lichamig is. En zij willen pillen, ze zijn te vergissen. Fuck de vooroordelen, zal tegen spelen verdedigen. Luister even naar mijn troonreden, Vervelen ben ik door met tegen steek. Zet de streep in je pen, zeker spuug in je avondeten. Zal voetbal spelen tegen hele delen. Ik zal reten vele voordelen versleten achterlaten tot er geen ene achterbleef. Niet in de met wet zijn rebellen, zal het je vertellen. Wij zijn volwagen Nederlands. Kijk eens naar mijn tekst, anders en ik praat. Dan ben je een vraag maar hoe ik ben. Vraag hoe je rent, je klem door een leven als een tram. Of ben jij de man niet hem? Sta verouder op in de bus, help dus met de klus. Kijk je aan plus, geef respect aan mij terug. Dus, want ik weet het circus.
Schreeuw uit wie je fuckers. Iedereen met de pet op, blaas het dak van de tent. Iedereen met de pet op, schreeuw uit wie je bent. Iedereen met de pet op, blaas het dak van de tent. Iedereen met de pet op, schreeuw uit wie je bent. Iedereen met de pet op, blaas het dak van de tent.
Doses are up. The music gets louder.
Into the void of sound delirium.
The music gets louder.
Vote.
This is Stop Distraction on Radio Distraction. United Underground of Mother Earth. Every Friday evening from 8 o'clock CET until early in the morning. Streamed and hosted by Patapu Radio in Amsterdam. My name is Ramses, Selector Ramses, and I'll be playing you lots of dub and bass today. And we are kicking off here with Misled Convoy 16 Sunsets, and this is a remix by Avon Sherwood. It's from 2020, released on Dub Nation Records.
sound is doing something to me.
Thank you.
Here we have an unreleased version of Omicron's Chanda. It's remixed by me. Yet unfinished, but good enough to play, I think so. Supposed to be released on either Dubmission or on Dispish. We will find that out. What will be released on Dispish is Visionary Sound System with Late Night Dub. In fact, it has already been released. And that is coming up right now.
This has been Hailu Mergia, an awesome Tapes of Africa release. Coming up next, a Nimbus Records release, a wonderful pianist originally from Houston that migrated to Los Angeles when he was 9 years old, the one and only Horace Tapscott. This song is called The Ballad for Window Lee. The Ballad for Window Lee Black. Once again, this album is At the Crossroads. Horace Tapscott and Evan Brown Jr., released in 1980 on the Nimbus Records label. hard to believe there's just two people on this song. That's right. That's Horace Tapscott and Evan Brown Jr. The album is At the Crossroads. It was released in 1980 on the Nimbus label. Wonderful, wonderful music. Wonderful, wonderful cut. We're going to finish with the 45 today of Gil Scott-Heron, Superman. Just recently acquired word. You've been listening to The Sounds of Solidarity. I'm Brother Jackson. Have a good night.
You have understood well, the riddles of the ages. Yes, and you have understood the universal mind. You have placed your footprints on the everlasting sands of time. Yeah, so tell me why can't you understand that there ain't no such thing as a Superman? There ain't no such thing as a Superman. You was on the Nile, you went to see Great Egypt fall, it fell down to the ground. Yes, and you was out there on the corner when being cool went blind. Are you alone? Understand that if we're gonna win, we've